come to that. It doesn't justify anything, but we have been warning for years that this will explode, and it has, and now we need a different approach.
Daniel Levy, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former Israeli peace negotiator with the Palestinians. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for our video news production fellowship. Go to democracynow.org for more information. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
Latino New Yorkers were 8 times more likely to be arrested for cannabis than white New Yorkers over the past 30 years. Black New Yorkers, 15 times more likely. White, black, or brown, data shows we all use cannabis at the same rate. Now New York has changed course and legalized cannabis for adults 21 and over. We are building an equitable industry that invests in communities. Learn more and visit cannabis.ny.gov.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at full power at 90.1 FM, also heard on 107.3 FM, and throughout the entire world and beyond at WUSB.FM. The time right now, 6 o'clock, time for another edition of Off the Wall. And since we are broadcasting at full power again on 90.1 FM, we have to step in early because we have so much to cover. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel here. Kyle over there.
I'm from there to here.
Do you feel it? Our voices are booming out through a much greater expanse of Long Island than the last almost 2 years.
Coming at you. All out your speakers.
Wow. Almost 2 years. It was in April of 2022. When our transmitter blew up, and it took quite a while to get a new transmitter, both designed, built, and paid for. Actually, that's three things, but it took a while. It took a while, but thanks to our chief engineer Frank Burgert and support of the university and the staff and just the heavens above, it finally worked out. So welcome back to all the people that are hearing us for the first time. I'm not sure if you were waiting for the station to just come back on the air. Maybe you were listening to that classical station and now we're stepping on them for a change. Who knows? Welcome back, whoever you are.
And I'll note, this is us catching up. This is long been in the works. It was a sudden cost and new project in a list of very many projects. If you listen to the show, we've done a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. As the station has moved, the campus has changed and grown a little bit. So that process has been dynamic and changing, and so this became absolutely a priority. We had to get all kinds of things assembled and put together. I was listening to what you were saying about it. It's an incredible piece of machinery, solid state. Longer analog. Doesn't have any tubes that I know of. There's all kinds of connectors and couplings, and we were just fascinated looking at this machinery, helping out, trying to just be supportive of the huge number of volunteers.
It's artificial intelligence. It talks to you. The transmitter talks to you. It says, what would you like me to do now?
Yeah, just basically put your hand very near it on this very cold piece of metal.
Don't touch it with your hand, because it'll get your fingerprints then, and then it'll have your identity.
Well, even just that radiating around it. But now
I'm scared of it. I'm scared of the new transmitter. I am. But, you know, I also respect it. And I think that's a good relationship.
And that was it. Like, witnessing that and then seeing it come together and finally put through the paces. There was some testing. Uh-huh. I'm not going to lie. There was even some moments where we had it on for a little bit, but nowhere near what it is now.
Well, we were testing it, but then
we had to.
Things didn't work properly.
Oh, and totally.
People threw their hands up in the air and said, "Oh gosh!" And and we had to proceed from there.
It got
kind of hot.
It did, yeah. And we were able to get that sorted out. But I'll caution people: this is just merely replacing what was.
Yes,
it is much more robust. It's one of the first of its kind. It's really exciting stuff. Like you said, it talks back. Mm-hmm. Maybe not.
We all talk back, Kyle.
Maybe not in the way that mm-hmm. you might know. Engineers.
They're the underlings of the engineers.
I feel like that's a new field.
No, I think we invent language every week here, sure.
We should perfect the engineering. We definitely take on the engineer role, but engineers would understand.
There could be a whole department at Stony Brook for engineers.
Yeah, the whispering.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit, some parts voodoo, and yeah, there's a lot of listening, and eventually we didn't break it, and now we get to do all kinds of other projects too. That this had taken a little bit more of a front seat.
Yeah.
So I'm just cautioning people. We're filling in, listen everywhere on all your radios. Let us know how it's going. We're happy to be back, coming through your stereo the way we should.
Do people still have stereos?
Well, whatever you're listening on the FM frequency, maybe even through your earbuds somehow, you have like an FM transmitter. Maybe you
FM receiver. If they have a transmitter, they're interfering.
I'm sorry, transceiver or something with your mobile device that sends and receives.
Yeah,
and
those
can
of you
pick
people
up on that.
Broadcasting on 90.1. We're on to you.
I don't mean to get technical and be so excited.
Yeah,
but left
behind by all the technical stuff we're talking about.
It's so really thrilling. So there's other stuff on the way. We're going to be able to improve, and we'll have fun drives and all kinds of new things coming to you. But the really exciting part about this is we're going to be able to continue. We're going to be able to build on this and take advantage of more of what being able to reach you, the listener, enables us to do. And that's so crucial when you're talking transmitter, you know.
Well, we started early because we have a lot of things to cover in this hour. Of course, we'll get to world events in just a little bit. But there are some things that we really do have to catch up on now that we're back at full power, not the least of which. Oh, yes. Does anyone out there remember this? You remember this feature that we had? Okay, I'll catch people up. This is, I don't even remember the name. Films of the Year That Was, I believe, is the name.
Correct.
Right? Okay, good. And we've been doing this, or we have been doing this for about 4 years, up until the day that our transmitter blew up. And basically what it involves is Kyle and myself watching Academy Award-winning films, Best Film of the Year. Since they began back in 1929, there was the first ceremony for a 1927 film called Wings. Good film. And we've seen every film since then. Now, at some point, they split up, and they had a domestic winner, and then they had a foreign film winner as well, which they recently renamed to international film. And we were almost finished. I think we made it up to 2020.
We were in very modern times.
And yes. Then the transmitter blew up. And, of course, we couldn't do it with, you know, reduced power. That goes against the contract of the feature. So we had to wait until we got the transmitter back. And now that we have the transmitter back, the feature is back as well. Isn't that exciting?
I remember this. Yeah. And right on time, as promised. Mm-hmm. Here we are back in the film watching mode. So we looked back, we checked our notes.
I'm looking back right now, actually. You know, the last time we did this was April 12th, 2022.
Okay.
And we reviewed a film then called Nomadland.
Right.
I'll get into the films in just a second, but interesting. That was the show where we followed the program with a two-hour special about this neighboring property at Stony Brook known as Gyrodyne that is under threat of being quote-unquote developed, which actually means destroyed, with all kinds of buildings, hotels, and God knows what else. And we did a two-hour special on that, for people who might remember. It's interesting, the timing of these things, because just this past week, there was a news report that that property might be saved by New York State. And Steve Englebright, former state assemblyman and former county legislator, is actually still involved in policies and conservation and things like that. So he's playing a part in that. And who knows? That property might be saved. So it's kind of interesting that that was the last program where we reviewed a film. We were talking about that. Now, what happened after that, the week after that last film, not only was when the transmitter blew up, but I got COVID. I got COVID that week. So I was isolated in a tiny room with a phone. And you were in the studio, with the remote studio. And and we weren't broadcasting at all at 90.1 at that point. So, yeah, we weren't really in the mood to do the film thing for sure. And we haven't ever since. So it's kind of weird that all those things happen at the same time. Gyrodyne, COVID, and the transmitter. Okay, so the films, the last international film that we reviewed was the film called Parasites, which actually had won the year before that as both the domestic and the international film. It's about, I think it's a South Korean film where a bunch of employees of a family, well, they become employees of the family. They sort of plot and scheme a way of taking over their lives. And you're left with the question, who are the parasites? The people who take over the lives or the people who can't survive without the people who take over the lives, or the guy who's hidden in the basement who relies on basically other people to take care of him. Yeah, so there was that. And that's an interesting film. That's reviewed back in 2022. But the actual last film that we saw was from 2020 called Nomadland. It was a film about this culture that exists in the United States, people that travel around in RVs, I believe, and just throughout the country. And they,
all kinds of vehicles, vans and buses and old trucks that have been converted and so forth. And that was fascinating because we found out that some of the people weren't actually told that this was a feature film or a fictional
story. They weren't actors. They
were being woven into
real people. Real
correct.
People.
Yeah, she had this persona, was telling this story, but interacting with people who were genuinely out there. So was it a documentary? Was it a story around a documentary? It was so fascinating, and it raised a lot of things, I think, as far as, you know, what, when and how to tell stories and what you tell the subjects of those stories.
And that's where we left off. We were going to go to the foreign film after that, but of course all that stuff happened and we couldn't until now. Last night we saw the foreign film from 2020, the one that won in 2020. I guess it won in the 2021 Academy Awards, is my understanding.
As the international
film. It's called Another Round. It's from Denmark. And boy, this is it's a weird film. It's basically about four teachers in a Danish school, what they call a gymnasium school. It's not a gymnasium like we know it. It's basically students, I believe, high school age, who are preparing for careers or college or whatever, and focused on exams and things like that. Very, very different from what we have here, but it's very different in other ways too.
I would say like a college prep or associate's preparatory school.
Yeah. So, okay, I'll read you quickly what the plot is. This group of teachers, four of them, at a celebration of one of their 40th birthdays, they begin to discuss the theory of a psychiatrist, famous psychiatrist, that humans are born with a blood alcohol content deficiency of 0.05%, and that if you happen to be at 0.05% all the time, it makes you more creative and relaxed. So these four teachers make it their mission to always be at that level. And it's just really bizarre how it's presented throughout this film, because, you know, it opens with this binge drinking contest that the high school students are having, where they're involved in some kind of race where they have to finish a beer at every point, and if they get sick, then they lose points. And it's really very strange when you realize these are high school kids doing this. But now the teachers are involved as well. And I don't know, you know, I enjoyed the film. It was interesting, but I couldn't figure out, like, what am I supposed to get out of this? What kind of message is it sending? Because it did not really leave, I mean, there were certainly negative aspects to drinking all the time, but it didn't leave that many of them. There were more positive aspects to drinking than there were negative, I believe. For instance, the teachers taught better when they were drunk. The chorus teacher was able to get the kids to sing better after he had a couple of drinks. History became more interesting when the teacher had a few. So, you know, the whole thing, you could never make that film in this country. Absolutely not. But it's because Denmark is very, very different from the United States. Do you know what the drinking age is in Denmark?
I don't know. I had suspected it's lower than I want to say 18.
Six. No, I'm kidding. Stop. I'm kidding. Stop. I'm kidding.
Really?
But am
they,
I?
If they can hold no. the Stein?
You said 18. 16.
16.
And there has been a move to increase that to 18. Widely condemned. Because parents don't want their kids drinking later. They have such fond memories of being pleasantly drunk in the past that they want their kids to experience the same thing. So they want to keep the drinking age at 16. It's never been 16 here. I remember when it was 18, and then it was 19, then it was 21. And
well, what I think is interesting is I have instances of in college drinking with teachers and professors, but definitely not in high school, not in the way they're portraying here. But drinking in high school, I don't think is necessarily unheard of at all. I mean, we have a huge, huge culture of drinking and binge drinking at even high school. Yeah, and my recollections of high school, definitely you're aware that drinking was going on even during the school day.
But it's not something that is celebrated.
Right, or the students would suspect a professor or one of the administration, sort of the dean or somebody had had a thing, you know, because
yeah, I mean, you know, in this country, it's looked down upon, and there's an argument that that makes it worse, that makes people do things behind the scenes and to excess. And, you know, to their credit, they didn't drive while they were drunk, you know, so I guess there's that. I don't know. I want to read you one thing, which I thought was pretty interesting, because this is an example of a previously boring history teacher kind of waking up his class, telling them that there's an election with three candidates. And this is a good exercise for our listeners as well. Pick who you want to vote for. Three candidates. Number one, we're not going to give names, but number one, a partially paralyzed from polio. He has hypertension. He's anemic. He suffers from an array of serious illnesses. He lies if it suits his purpose and consults astrologist on his politics. He cheats on his wife, chain smokes, and drinks too many martinis. That's candidate number one. Candidate number two, he's overweight. He's already lost three elections. He suffers from depression and has had two heart attacks. He's impossible to work with and smokes cigars nonstop. And every night, when he goes to bed, he drinks incredible amounts of champagne, cognac, port, whiskey, and adds two sleeping pills before dozing off. And number three, highly decorated war hero. He treats women with respect. He loves animals, never smokes, and only has a beer on rare occasions. So of those three, which one sounds the best? And the entire class said number three. Well, okay, you picked number three. So by discarding number one, you've discarded Franklin D. Roosevelt. By discarding number two, you discarded Winston Churchill. But by picking number three, you just elected Adolf Hitler. That was amazing. That was an incredible lesson right there, and it totally captivated the students.
And he immediately says, not everyone and not everything in history is as it seems. Mm-hmm. And he's really breaking through, saying, yeah, these virtues, they're nice, but sometimes the trait, they're not the traits of people that are truly rising to the moment in history in these milestones.
There is a scene, I forget how exactly it came about, but there is a scene where all of this real footage is shown of world leaders completely plastered off their heads. And it is hilarious to watch. You see Clinton and Boris Yeltsin, both smashed, you know, beyond recognition. You see Brezhnev, I think Boris Johnson you even see, right?
Yeah, there's all these outtakes, and it's so funny because you realize this is going on. They have all these meetings and summits and so forth that are just big events. So they get together and they come out and always have these traditional photos together. So it's like, it's this glad handing and stuff. And the outtakes are there. They do it so very much that it's incredibly common. So to have a reel of all of it, it's hilarious. Cause it comes up to even very recent figures. Angela Merkel's there with a beer. Stein.
Well, she was just holding the beer. She wasn't really drunk. Was she?
No, but I think she was in some of the video outtakes, too, uh-huh. where they're standing around to assemble for that photo. So it's super funny. And
I mean, it's a good way to get people off their high holy horses. What? Everybody is guilty in some way.
You realize these highly produced political pictures and coiffed moments that are just so intricately assembled and are diplomatically significant. Yeah, they're also, you know, just coming from lunch and can be so goofy and funny for the cameras that are rolling, even though they're actually posing for a still shot. And there's so many other moments like that.
So it's a good film. I think we recommend it. Another Round. You can find it online. And it's the Academy Award winner for 2021. Believe it or not, the four main actors, as well as the director, would meet to drink just enough to let go of embarrassment in front of one another. So they actually drank to make the film as well. And they would also watch drunk people on YouTube to better understand how completely inebriated people would act. And to make things even more fun, there's an American English language remake of the film, which is planned to star Leonardo DiCaprio. So.
Oh, I thought it already existed in every mainstream film there is that generally doesn't win Best Picture, but gosh, there's so many, like Road Trip and just tons of films that are silly like this around drinking to excess. But fascinating. It really romanticized, just made it so beautiful. Like just, it was, yeah. it was, it was almost, it was, You were hungover from how glorified and beautiful and just sound they made it, even though there was some tragedy as well. So.
Yeah, I could see some people getting a really bad impression from this film, but also it kind of shows you that there's other ways of looking at things or other cultures in the world, and maybe we don't have it all figured out.
The messages, they're as mixed as a fine cocktail.
Let's just turn that off. And, can I just say something? We don't usually do this, but we wanted to get the next film, obviously. I reached the conclusion that streaming services should not be allowed in the Academy Awards. You know, it's not something I would have said a few years ago. But there is the next film. We've never done this before, but we're going to tell you what the next film is before we even see it.
We're talking about.
I have to because this has taken up so much of my time.
People don't want to know how the sausage is made, though.
It's this film. It's 2021's Best Picture, and it's called Coda.
I remember that.
Well, we didn't see it, but yeah, you remember it winning.
I remember it winning. Yeah. So this is about Apple, isn't it?
It is about Apple. Let me get my rant out, then you can get your rant out. But basically, I'm going to read you something from online where somebody is basically saying the same things I'm trying to say here. This won the Academy Award as 2021's Best Picture, and there was no Blu-ray release in sight. Now, let me point out, every time we see one of these films, we get the DVD or the Blu-ray. We've been doing this since 1929. Not us doing this since 1929, but every single film that we have seen that has won the domestic Academy Awards as Best Picture, we have for our possession, as is tradition. You know, it used to be VHS, and it was DVD, then it was Blu-ray. Every single film we have, we can go back, we can see it again.
Well, for reference and to check things, maybe something,
of course.
We see a connection
and
between directors.
And it's just good to be able to point to a shelf and say, look, those are all the Academy Award winning films in the United States right there until 2021, because Apple is the company that released this film. And their first streaming service to win the Oscar, and they were eligible because it basically they played a couple of theaters for a week in order to qualify. They didn't even release it in the theaters properly. Just, you know, a couple of theaters, and they qualified in that way. So if you want to buy this film on DVD or on Blu-ray, well, I almost was tricked. I saw it. Hey, there's Coda on Amazon. I was one click away from clicking the one-click button to get the thing. And then I noticed there's this little note that says, this is a frequently returned item, which is a great feature to have. But I was wondering, okay, what's wrong with what's wrong with this? I looked at the reviews. People liked the film. There wasn't really a problem there. Then I realized, wow, this film called Coda is not the film called Coda that I want. Another film named Coda was released only 2 years earlier, and it has got Patrick Stewart in it. And yeah, that's why people were returning it, because they thought they were getting the one from 2021. So my search resumed, and I realized you can't buy this film. You can't buy it on Blu-ray. You can't buy it on DVD. You can't buy it on VHS. You have to subscribe to Apple Plus to see the film.
This is gatekeeping.
I refuse to do that. I am not going to subscribe to your damn service. This is why I don't own Macs. This is why I shy away from any Apple products, because of this cult they pull you into. You have to keep buying their products, and you can't substitute it with anything else. No, not for the best film of the year. Absolutely not. That is something that you do not mess with. So, I consider turning to piracy, you know, looking online on the dark web, you know, and finding, you know, a copy of the film that way, but it wouldn't be right. I mean, I don't care about, you know, the piracy so much. I care about not having an actual copy of the film as it was put out, you know, with a picture and just looking nice and things like that. Then I started exploring other countries, because maybe Apple doesn't have the stranglehold in other places that it does here. And it took a while. It took longer than it should have. But it turned out that Amazon.it, which is Amazon in Italy, actually offered this on Blu-ray. Now, what I had to do, I'm not proud of, I had to learn a lot of Italian. I just had to keep cutting and pasting into a translate app to make an Italian Amazon account and then set that up and somehow get this thing and get them to agree to send it to the United States and whole big thing. But I did it. I did it. And there is, in fact, Kyle, if you'll lift up that pillow next to you, you will see that is where I would have put the DVD if it. I would have put it there if.
Why'd you make me do that at all?
Well, because it was supposed to arrive earlier today, and it just arrived about an hour ago, and there wasn't enough time to go and get it. But
yeah,
it would have been so cool because I would have, you know, you would have picked it up and seen it. But it's just it's a few miles away, but it'll be there, and we'll see it by next week. But what I had to go through to get that film is insane, and that's why streaming services that are this greedy and corrupt should never be allowed to submit films. And, you know, they only bought the film at Sundance so that more people would subscribe to Apple Plus. This might not even be a good film.
So it was all business moves?
It's
they
all
weren't
business.
Actually the production company? Wow. See, I don't know. I don't know about all this film producing stuff. Gosh.
Because
so they get punished by the consumers not wanting to participate in the gatekeeping, the people that wrote the movie, the people that actually produced it,
well,
they
it's
sort of
bad for them.
Indirectly get punished because their only distribution is Apple or the dark web, as you said, or wherever incidental mistakes. And the people that are locked into those video or iTunes or iMovie, I don't know what they use, but it's not fair. Because there's no other avenue. And the thing that is cool about Blu-rays and stuff is it makes it portable.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe this is guaranteeing them some... How do you even convince a filmmaker that, okay, well, it's going to be less prone to piracy? Because, hey, you just said it's available. You can find it places. People are going to find a way if they can get one copy. One of those Mac people could make a whole business
The only way you can find this film, is through piracy or in the foreign market. You cannot find this film in this country through any legitimate service.
So they had another country produce the Blu-ray didn't have.
There's another caveat to this. It's available. The rules are different in Italy. They're different in different countries, and we are getting a Blu-ray disc, but. As part of this whole corrupt scheme, that Blu-ray disc will not play on an American Blu-ray player. You have to have a region-free Blu-ray or DVD player to play a different region Blu-ray or DVD. Fortunately, we have one because we've been playing this game for quite some time.
Okay.
And it's really, really worthwhile to invest in such a thing if you have any interest at all in things that don't only come from the United States. This is what we did with the TV series Northern Exposure. Because when they released it in this country, they butchered the music because there was more greed with copyright as far as releasing it on Blu-ray or DVD. But in Germany, the rules were different. So we were able to get a full set of that in Germany, a different region. We have a region-free Blu-ray player, so it works great. But it's work you shouldn't have to go through. But that's how it is.
So the uptake in those markets is so low for Amazon or Apple that the only way to distribute is through physical media. It doesn't make sense, in other words, to try to do what they're doing in the American market. This is really unfair, and you would think that for Academy Award-winning films, not I'm saying this totally out of my own bias and self-interest, but you'd think at least for these, the Academy would release them through an American distributor as a physical medium because they were awarded and let the other ones on a streaming service not get that. But this could be the largesse of Apple forcing these kinds of policies that require signing up for something that isn't actually just a copy, a recording.
Yeah, they should not be allowed to do that.
Like if it was a digital option, if you could just buy a digital copy from Apple and not sign up for their program, you'd be willing to do that.
No, I don't.
Right?
No, I don't want to just watch it on. We see the foreign films online. I want a physical copy of the domestic films.
Even
I don't
if think, you
because
could...
every single film since 1929, I've been able to do that. So I kind of don't want to stop now when we're only 2 years away from the end. So,
yeah, and even if you could presumably make your own burn on a physical disc.
No, that
doesn't. It's not the same.
That's not the same. That's not the same.
All right. That's the last thing I'm saying.
I could go into, someone's house and film it, but that's not going to be the same.
Point made.
All right.
This is not cool.
We have to move on. But Apple Plus, don't fall for the scam.
Do better.
All right. Yeah. In a way, it's. I like talking about film for the first part of the show because it kind of keeps us from talking about the other unpleasantness in the world. We started talking about that last week. Of course, I'm talking about the Israeli-Gaza hell that's unfolding. It continues to unfold. And I got to tell you, I'm seeing such hypocrisy, such shameful behavior on different sides of this issue. The media coverage in this country, I cannot believe it. I cannot believe how they refuse to turn the camera just a little bit to see how other people are being affected and devastated by what's going on. If you look at foreign media and things like BBC News, Euronews, Al Jazeera, virtually anybody else outside the United States, you will see a lot of coverage of what's happening in Gaza. If you watch American media, you will see replays of what happened in Israel. You will hear recounting of what happened in Israel. You will hear about what we plan on doing in Israel. And I'm not saying these things aren't important. Of course they are. What happened in Israel, as we said from the very beginning, was outrageous, terrible, and needs to be stopped. The people behind it need to be tracked down. Absolutely. But there's more to the story. There are people who cannot bring themselves to condemn the terrorist act against Israel, and there are people who cannot bring themselves to condemn what Israel is doing to the people of Gaza. All those people only capable of condemning one side or another, you've lost any moral authority to comment on this issue, in my opinion. I don't think we can have a conversation because you refuse to see the evils of the other side. There's only evil on one side. If you cannot comprehend that evil exists on both sides of this issue, and it's an ugliness and needs to be confronted, and it's not just a good guys versus bad guys thing, much as you might want it to be, I just don't see how we can have a constructive dialogue, And it's changing, Last week, we were condemning people who were showing up in at rallies and refusing to condemn Hamas, and basically the day after, or even the day of the terrorist attack in Israel, having pro-Palestine rallies, it just was in very bad taste. Anybody with an ounce of sense could see that at that moment. It's not in bad taste now. It hasn't been in bad taste for quite a few days. Because what we have seen with what's happening in Gaza, I don't even know how to describe it. I've really never seen anything like this. But let me try. 1,000 kids have been killed. 1,000 children have been killed by Israel. That is a fact. You might be able to not hear it being said on your media outlet, but that is what happened. And if you can justify that in any way, either by saying, well, that's the cost of war, or it's the fault of Hamas because they happen to have their headquarters in the middle of an apartment building or a hospital or a school. If you can actually justify that and say, yeah, we had to kill 1,000 kids, you are no better than Hamas. I really mean that. You are no better than Hamas because what Hamas did was savage. It was horrible. They went into people's homes and they slaughtered them. They murdered them. And is that different than killing dozens or hundreds of people by pressing a button? I have to say, I am certainly no fan of Hamas and I do not want to justify anything that they do. But if you burst into somebody's home and kill them, horrible as that is, it's not having them live in terror for weeks before you destroy their apartment building and kill them and their entire family. Does that somehow make it better that you don't see your victim? You know, it's in a way that that sanitizes the whole thing and makes it even more repugnant. And I'm just seeing a lot of people going down a very dark road here by closing their eyes to what's happening in Gaza. Just today, a hospital was bombed. And according to reports that I'm seeing, and this is changing by the hour, 500 people were killed. Now, it's being reported as an Israeli airstrike. And Israel is saying, no, it wasn't us. It was a Palestinian militant group, a different Palestinian militant group, not Hamas. Apparently, there's more than one. And their missile misfired and hit a hospital. You know, I've been looking into this a little bit. It's very rare for a missile to do that kind of damage, or a Palestinian missile, but it's possible. So let's see who is lying here, because somebody is lying. And not to put my thumb on the scale in any way, we've caught the Israeli military, the Israeli government lying on a number of occasions. And yes, we've certainly caught the various Palestinian groups lying as well. But this will be telling. This will be very, very telling to see who is responsible for that. And if it does turn out to be Israel that's responsible for something like this, it's nothing short of a terrorist act, because somebody targeted that place. Somebody knew that was a hospital. And if that doesn't put an end to the entire operation right there and then somebody has to step in and end it. Because this cannot go on. It's insane. And our hands are dirty too, if we're going to be sending all kinds of aid over to continue this kind of horror. And I hope when Biden goes over there on Wednesday, hey, that's tomorrow, I hope he is able to talk some sense into the people over there. Yeah, I get that there's anger. I get that people are devastated and hurt. But what is it you're looking for? You know, if it's to kill more of their civilians than they killed of you, well, you already accomplished that. If it's wipe out Hamas, okay, I agree with that, but you're very bad at doing it. You know, you haven't been able to wipe them out at all over the past few decades. And what you're doing now, you're killing innocent people. Hamas is probably surviving. And on top of all that, you're really bolstering their membership numbers.
Yeah, the indiscriminate aspect of it only creates resentment, and people will take advantage of that and step in a charismatic way to convince people that they should channel their grief and anger towards their cause, and this is how things can grow when they're not handled and become a backlash in so few words. So it's the other funny thing is that there's all of this sensitivity about it. While it was occurring, no one really knew what was going on last weekend. And it took a lot of time. There's a lot of people jumping to conclusions that are all of a sudden experts that felt very free and brazen to actually comment on it. But the fact is, a lot of people aren't actually seeing what is happening. There hasn't been a review or an investigation of it, because it's all real time. Okay, so you're getting reporting. There's stuff that's on social media, but going through believing everything on social media and having to look at all of it and judge for yourself could be terribly traumatizing and so forth. So I think a lot of people have stepped away from trying to absorb all of that. But even in the mainstream coverage, of course, they won't show anything graphic. They'll skirt around it and talk about the things they find important. But I think concerning to me that you don't really know what's going on, but then you're told what's going on, but it's terribly graphic and it's awful, and you're just told to believe that because of this evidence you never want to look at and you never are going to see, and there isn't time for an investigation, is enough to go in and find the WMDs or the chemical weapons labs, or, you know, it just smacks of a lot of hustle to be overwhelmingly brutal, barbaric in return, based on really sensitive coverage. I mean, there are journalists are getting blown up and stuff like that. The actual cameras that would be going in there that would be trying to relay and tell the stories. One of the live shots, I think some Reuters journalists got hit or otherwise injured. And I mean, that is the immediacy of the current event itself. So fast forward to now, there's this disappearing again. They're not going to see the graphic nature of it, and it's not convenient to be talking about the 1,000 kids that are killed or whatnot. I mean, the scale and the volleys are out of control, and then the blame and the sort of fog of war, because, well, there's all of this artillery being shot and all of this kind of explosion here, explosion there. I mean, then it only further makes it even murkier and further obfuscates any kind of reasoned coverage of who the aggressor is or who is in need and where humanitarian aid can go, if it's even possible to get it anywhere. You know, who is the humanitarian in the end?
You know, it's very hard to even comprehend some of what's going on over there. But I think of, an analogy. If you're in a bar, right, with a bunch of your friends, and one of them just is about to get into a fight with somebody, what do? You hold them back. You say, hey, you know, Randy or whatever, sit down, calm down. Let's work this out. Of course, you have their back. I think that needs to happen with Israel to a degree, because they're operating without any controls, any restrictions at all, doing whatever they feel like doing, not following the rules of international combat or any kind of combat for that matter. And all we keep saying is, yes, they have the right to defend themselves. This is not defending yourself. This is basically slaughtering people who had nothing to do with what happened. And that is a war crime. Full stop. That is a war crime. Somebody needs to grab them and sit them down and say, calm down. Let's figure this out. And that's what friends are for. If we are truly their friend, we will stop this self-destructive course and work together to find some kind of a solution. I think the rest of the world needs to play a big part in this as well. Because clearly, you know, the way it's been so far, and we said this last week, hasn't worked. You know, the whole a blockade of Gaza and the occupation of the West Bank, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So we need to try something else.
I heard a suggestion. One of the callers on Washington Journal this morning on C-SPAN, of course, was suggesting, you know, why exactly, whatever state controls that territory, it ought not to be a religious entity. And there's the idea that it has to be a de facto theocracy. Mm-hmm. It should just administer the people there. And I mean, those are, because it was the discussion around two state, one state. It should be one state.
What were they referring to, saying that it shouldn't be a
religion? I don't know exactly. It was basically the idea of the two-state concept and the frameworks that have been tried in previous attempts. And the person was kind of making the point that, like, yeah, it should be one state, but it shouldn't be one or the other. It should just be an administrative sort of a nation that is encompassed by a multitude of people. But that
Israel and Palestine as one state?
Yeah, kind of arguing that. The radical elements politically have driven it to this, essentially. And sort of saying, like, they should be more hands-off about their own domestic identity.
Okay, the only thing I can say is this person really missed his bus, because it's way off in the distance, and that's forget it. but speaking to the whole theocracy, religion, running governments and things like that, you know, this is something that I think is abused by the government of Israel. You know, if I disagree with a country, or if I disagree with my country, we're taught that we have a right to criticize and we have a right to have demonstrations. Flag burning is something that is basically protected in our country. I know it's not protected everywhere, but, you know, we should at least in our minds realize that that's a legitimate form of expression. If you burn an Israeli flag, it's anti-Semitism. Why? Because the Star of David is on the flag. Okay, but, you know, it's the Israeli government that put the Star of David on the flag. So how are you supposed to burn the Israeli flag without committing an act of anti-Semitism? You see, it's kind of like you're being set up here. Now, I'm not saying that anti-Semitism is not a huge problem, and it's getting worse. It's getting a lot worse. But when you close off any legitimate form of protest and label everybody as anti-Semitic or as a terrorist, yeah, in the end, you're making it harder for yourself because you're closing off legitimate dialogue and opposition. And that is exactly what Netanyahu wants to do. That is what he was trying to do with the Supreme Court before all of this. And, you know, I dare say that he is getting exactly what he wanted. Nobody will oppose him now. He'll get the war that he wanted, and he did want this war. That's one way I think he and Hamas are on the same page. They both want war, and they both don't care about the Palestinian people. And it's disgusting. It's horrible. And I really hope he pays the price for this, because what he is doing is absolutely horrible for everybody. And it's probably too early to realize that. It's probably too early for people, especially over there, to know that they're being taken advantage of and manipulated. But that's the danger. That's a danger in a volatile situation like that. So things are changing over here. There was a pro-Palestinian rally in Mineola, and that brought out 1,500 people, which is unprecedented. It took place a week after the Hamas terrorist attacks, which you know, I think is a respectful distance and is less likely to be seen as endorsing what Hamas did. I just wish so many more people had condemned Hamas from the very beginning. And I hope that many of the people who showed up at this rally in Mineola did that. Many of the speakers and rallygoers condemned the violence by Hamas, according to this Newsday report. Others framed it as part of a resistance to Israel's occupation of Gaza and the West Bank, and what they described as decades of human rights abuses, which it very well might be. But again, you don't want to be seen as endorsing something that is clearly horrible and evil.
Well, I think at the time, though, day after, there were breaches. But again, the graphic nature, the extreme brutality, all of the stories took a little bit of time to come out. I'm not defending at all. I mean, I kind of am, but just not, I don't want to endorse, like you said, at all. But I am saying that the reporting took a little bit of time, so there's a delay. And I think people jumped to conclusions during the weekend, patching together the coverage, figuring out, whoa, this is totally different. This is big. This is and then the brutality itself started coming out when you heard about the Nova Festival and so on.
Yeah. One of the main organizers of the event, Abdulaziz Boyan, told the boisterous crowd, "We mourn and pray for the innocent lives lost, children and elderly, injured and displaced people in the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza." Of course, the numbers quoted then are no longer the numbers today. A leader of the Hillside Islamic Center Mosque in New Hyde Park, he called on President Joe Biden and the United States to intervene to stop the bombing and protect the lives of innocent civilians in Gaza. The bombings, the displacement of civilians, and the ongoing Israeli blockade of Gaza have turned it into an open-air prison. We stand in solidarity with the Palestinians in their quest for freedom, dignity, and human rights, he said. We stand against any form of hatred, anti-Semitism, or Islamophobia. Dr. Isma Chaudhry, a leader of the Westbury-based Islamic Center of Long Island Mosque, said she condemned the violence by Hamas, but noted that the Palestinians have suffered decades of oppression by Israel. The loss of one human life is a shame of all humanity, she said, but at this time the U.S. position is very one-sided in focusing on the suffering of Israel, but not the Palestinians. While she criticized Hamas's violence, others seem to suggest it was an open question. One speaker led a chant, "Resistance is justified when people are occupied." Yeah, but your behavior will define what it is you stand for. And if you do horrible things to people as part of your resistance, a lot less people will be likely to sympathize with that resistance. I know that's hard to keep in mind when you've been oppressed for decades, when you live in an open-air prison. I know that. But that's the reality of the situation. And here in this country, we have the luxury to be able to try and look at this in a calmer light and be able to say something without immediately following it with, but they did it first, or but it could be justified or whatever. Take the moment to share in the grief and the horror of what's happening. And then have the conversation afterwards and bring more people together. Otherwise, you're just perpetuating the conflict, just spreading it around. We need to do that. We need to do that on all sides. And right now, very, very, very few are.
Yeah, resistance, means so many different things. I mean, in Western societies, it might mean showing up and talking to representatives or making some posters and stuff, and it might mean entirely different things in situ, there in the actual conditions. It might mean weapons, or it might mean food and fuel and just the ability to maintain an existence under blockades and so forth. So you have to qualify and clarify some of that language.
On Sunday, hundreds gathered in Great Neck in a display of support for Israel, more than a week after the Hamas militant attack. Nassau County legislator Mazi Melissa Pilip said, "After what happened to our people in Israel a week ago, this is really to show that the U.S. will fight this with Israel side by side." I don't know about side by side. It seems a little ominous. Through songs, prayers, and speeches, people came together to express their support for Israel, while others waved Israeli flags in Village Green Park in Great Neck. The fire department blew its horn in honor of the lives lost in the October 7th attack. Elena Aminoff of Great Neck showed her support for Israel by selling signs that said, "We stand with Israel," at the rally. All proceeds will go towards charities for victims of the war. Although, I have to say, seeing people gathering supplies for the victims of Israel, Israel is a fairly wealthy country. I think they can get supplies. I really don't think that's needed at this point. I think the supplies are certainly needed for the people who are being bombed into oblivion, but good luck trying to donate to them, because it's probably illegal in this country to do that. It's hard to think about now, the attacks, this person continues. It's hard to watch the news. It's hard to hear everything. It's not easy, another person said. His mother lives in the central part of Israel. Missiles are coming. She hears them explode. She's fearful. I'm fearful for her. Thomas Major, 74 years old, of Great Neck, said he also had many family members in the Israeli army. I have five family members that are in the Israeli army. Even if I didn't have relatives, the brutality of what happened there, I think any country needs support to show that it can't happen again. I sympathize. Didn't see a single word here about Palestinians. And that is the difference. I saw condemnation of Hamas from the pro-Palestinian rally. Not a word about Palestinians in the pro-Israel rally. We need to bridge that gap, or we're not going to get anywhere.
Indeed, yeah.
All right, we are out of time, unfortunately. Or fortunately, not really sure which. Please watch the news and find other sides. Write to us, otw@2600.com.
See you later.
Good night.
Look, Mommy, there's an airplane up in the sky. Thank you.
frightened ones. Did you hear the falling bombs? Did you ever wonder why we had to run for shelter when the promise of a brave new world unfurled beneath the clear blue sky? Falling bombs, the flames are all long gone.